About the actual title on the presentation was Trust Security Partnership, Strategies in Selecting a Managed Service Provider. And as you can see by the title of the actual presentation I'm going to be giving, bottom line, we're going to be exploring what it is to look for and what to look for when you go and select a managed service provider. So I want to thank you first for the opportunity to spend the next 45 minutes to an hour with you going through the discussion of what to look for, what questions to ask when you are selecting a managed service provider for implementing specifically an internet e-business infrastructure. And we'll talk a little bit about that because there's a lot of different managed service providers out there in the world today. And again, since it is a small crew, please stop and we'll answer questions along the way. It'll make a lot of sense for this type audience. Who am I? I'm Gordon Reichert Jr. I'm the president and CEO of Telenesis Corporation. I actually founded the company just about a year ago this time. I'm an electrical engineer by actual education out of Southern Illinois University. From there, I went into got my MBA a number of years after that. Did a number of different startup companies at a variety of different companies such as Zenith Electronics, Ameritech, U.S. Robotics, and even started the Midwest sales engineering region for 3Com years ago. So I've always been in a startup mode, and Telenesis is the first actual ground start company that I've ever built, and we're very happy with the progress and success we've been enjoying over the last 12 months. So that's a little bit about me. I have a lot of experience, however, on both sides of the managed service equation. That's the buy side and the sell side. I've bought a lot of managed services in the years. I bought programming services for developing management systems. I've bought desktop management services for managing desktops. And I've also, most recently, signed a fairly large contract to deploy nationwide installation and maintenance services using third-party technicians. So I have a lot of experience in buying managed services from a variety of different type of suppliers. I've also sold a lot of managed services over the years. I've sold and supported managed router service. I've sold and supported managed data services, managing networks anywhere from 5 locations up to 1,000 locations. And even now, I'm selling managed e-business services, delivering those services to companies. So I have a lot of experience in the whole arena of managed services. While the process is similar, or I should say the process is similar, no matter what kind of managed services you buy, there are differences. And in today's discussion, we're going to focus specifically on securing managed services for e-business internet platforms. And those are platforms that consist of basically 3 components: security services, IP virtual networking services, and managed hosting services. We're going to get into some of the criteria, some of the issues that you want to look for when you're making a decision to find and buy those type of services from a supplier. So I hope today you find my insight and ideas helpful in the selection process in the event you do go to a managed service provider. Over the next 45 minutes, we will cover basically 4 different things: trends and size of the overall managed service marketplace. Now we'll look at the benefits and pitfalls of using managed service providers. We'll look at the actual process or the blueprint or the plan that you should go through, and that's the meat of the presentation, the actual issues, the questions you should ask during the decision process or the selection process of a service provider. And then, of course, we'll close with questions and so on. I'd like to start, though, with just a few stories. The other day when I flew in, yesterday, here at the airport, checked my bags, of course, at O'Hare, and I won't disclose the carrier, get here, and I'm standing at the baggage claim, 15, 20, 25 minutes, and I go ask the service agent, what's the deal? I'm waiting here 25 minutes for my bag, what is the deal? The guy says, 25 minutes? Oh, well, that's your problem. It's always 30 to 35 minutes you have to wait for your bag. I ask, why would I have to wait 35 minutes for my bag? Well, that's just how long it takes the baggage guy to drive across the airport. You know, he has to avoid all the planes. It's just, I guess I had to understand the issue. Also, on another front, I bought some furniture, and you'll see where I'm going with this. It all has to do with service and buying service and getting service. I also had an experience not too long ago where I bought some furniture. large department store, and ordered the furniture. And of course, I give him the money, and he says, "Well, by the way, it's going to be 3 months. You have to wait for the furniture." Well, that's super. I'll wait the 3 months. 1 week before the furniture is going to be delivered, I get a call. He says, "Good news, Mr. Reichert." I says, "Oh, that's what's the good news?" "Good news. We found a flaw in your furniture." "Okay, your quality control guys found a flaw, and we're going to send it back, so we're not going to send you this flawed furniture." I said, "Well, that's fantastic. When am I going to get my furniture?" "Well, it'll be another 3 months, because, of course, you got to go to the back of the queue." And I asked very simply, "Well, that doesn't make any sense. I've already waited my 3 months." "Oh, no. Oh, no, no. If we did that for you, we'd have to give everybody their furniture sooner, and we can't do that. You don't want to inconvenience the other customers, do you, Mr. Reichert?" And it just amazes me. As I thought through what I experienced yesterday, as I think about these examples and many others, I thought about the overall service levels in this country across a variety of different industries seem to be declining overall. And what's more disturbing, I'm finding, is customers are becoming far too accepting and tolerant of poor service. Now, in the latter one, of course, I don't shop there anymore. That was the last penny I spent there. I won't spend another penny there. But I know, for that particular airlines, you know, even though they jerk me around on my luggage, I'm going to have to use them again. There's not just a lot of choices. So we become tolerant. And why is that relevant to today's discussion? Because managed services is about buying service. It's about buying the service you want. It's about buying a better service than you can provide on your own for yourself. And that's what today's topic is about. How you can make sure you get the service you want, the best service available at the best price. As the previous slide said, building an e-business infrastructure is a lot like building a house. I was a carpenter at one point in my life as well. And if you think about it, a house has a lot of different things, right? It has electrical work that has to get done. It has plumbing work that has to occur, carpentry work that has to occur, and so on. An e-business infrastructure to take your business from wherever it is today to a new web-based click-and-mortar type business has a variety of different components too. Firewalls, security. It has hosting, web-based applications. It has IP networking, virtual private networks. A lot of different components. What are the similarities between these two situations? One, a lot of different components that have to be assembled correctly and in harmony for the solution to work the first time, and as importantly, to continue working on a going forward basis. Second, requirements for a lot of expertise. A lot of expertise to do all that individual work. There's three ways to go about implementing the infrastructure or building a house, for that matter. One, you could do it yourself, right? Hire all your own people, buy all your own supplies, build the whole entire infrastructure yourself. Absorb the expense, absorb the time, and go at it. Second, you can be the general contractor. Admit the fact that you don't know how to do the electrical work, or you don't know how to do the security, you don't know how to do the hosting or whatever, but you want to maintain the control and you want to deliver the entire solution. You want to maintain control and implement it yourself. Be the general contractor. The third is outsource the whole thing. Get rid of it. Hire a general contractor and let them take care of the whole thing. Super easy. Takes a little bit longer. A little bit more loss of control, but it is easy. Today we're going to focus on the second, which is what I think is becoming most commonplace, is you, the customer, maintaining the role of general contractor. For all the reasons that I just recently mentioned, you maintain control, which I find a lot of customers today, it's very, very important to maintain that control. You get quick access to expertise, very quick access to expertise, much quicker than if you had to hire and build it on your own. Quicker time to market. Right, the expertise is there, the capacity there, the skills are there, you get it very quickly. And of course, the ensuing cost benefits of leveraging an infrastructure that you didn't have to pay for. So let's delay the land here. What's going on? There's a mass movement towards managed services. We talked a little bit about it, but I'll give you some numbers. These things always help when building the business cases. Why is there intense competition for talent? There's a lot of different studies, or even read a couple most recent articles on my flight out here. 50% of the reason IT managers, in fact, there was a survey, Information Week, I believe it was about a week ago, 4,900 IT and CIOs and so on type managers were interviewed, and 50% of them indicated the main reason to look to managed services was the lack of expertise. So there's intense competition for talent. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then, really the crux of what we're talking about today, is how can that managed service provider create value for you? And if the selection process is done correctly, which is what we're going to explore deeply, if it's done correctly, you will get the maximum benefit from a managed service provider being used inside your business. So let's just throw some numbers out here. Numbers are always good. 83% of all companies today outsource some of their IT needs. And there's many studies, but the two that I pulled directly from were Meta Group and Cutter Consortium. 93% of that same group indicated that within 5 years, they will be outsourcing some or all parts of their infrastructure. And the main driver, and I have another slide later that's going to talk about this as well, one of the key drivers behind this movement is the deployment of websites and web-centric applications. And we've seen in 1988, 44% of large IT organizations outsourced a website. That number's already grown to 62%, and that number will continue to grow. As the number of websites and web-based applications continue to increase and deploy, the need for e-business infrastructure will continue to increase, and the need for skills and talent and expertise will continue to accelerate. So what's the pressure? All your businesses somehow, or whatever business you're involved in, somehow, some form, some fashion, have been impacted by the new e-commerce way of doing business, the new web-centric way of doing business, that is forcing a fundamental change to the business model. The value chain in which your business employs has fundamentally changed. And if it hasn't, it has to. And if it doesn't, you're going to get passed by. I can't imagine a business 5 years from now somehow not having the web and communications built deeply into their company as far as their value chain and value proposition to the customers. About $20 billion this year alone will be spent on e-commerce sites. $20 billion. The Aberdeen Group says third parties will eventually assume most, if not all, the responsibilities for providing these IT solutions. I look at it slightly differently. If we remember, I don't know if you remember the old IBM days before the government split the service from the IBM or from the equipment side. Remember the old AT&T days, the Ma Bell. Life for an IT manager or a CIO or whatever the guy in charge of the infrastructure was at that time was pretty easy. You went to AT&T, you got the phones, you got the wiring, you got the long distance, you got the local, you got it all. It all worked. For the computers, you went to IBM. You got the terminals, you got the mainframes, you got the software, you got it all there. It all worked. And then you went golfing and hit cocktail parties and everything else, and life was nice and smooth. But that's the way life was. Customers liked the simplicity of it all. Now, a lot of good things have happened over the last 20 years. More choices, more technology, faster, more companies, all good things have resulted, but there's a couple bad things that have resulted. That it's a lot more complex now to make this stuff work. A lot more complex. Where it was one or two companies, you get the whole thing. Now assembling one of these solutions takes 5, 10, 15, 20 different companies that have to be assembled. And all the expertise and all the integration work and all the security issues that have to be addressed in assembling that. I think there's a movement back towards the old way. Customers are seeking the simple way to buy a communications infrastructure, an infrastructure that includes the hosting, the security, the IP networking all built in. So the business itself can therefore focus on the core competencies of the business, whatever it is that that business makes. So either way, same thing said twice. Intense competition for talent. Bottom line, there's about 1 million IT jobs open this year. 30% will go unfilled. This was an interesting one. 60% of all people, 60% of mid to large size businesses will rehire IT professionals they let go or wouldn't pay in the past years. There's been a major increase in IT and communication expertise and their salaries. A lot of companies just let them go. Over the next few years, they're going to hire them all back at that higher price. And unemployment, of course, for IT is much lower than in the rest of the world, or in the rest of the overall market. Now, how can the MSP create value? Here's the key. Number one, it reduces complexity and also can improve performance by offering the integrated single point of contact solution. And we're going to talk about how you can get there. It also speeds up problem resolution. More the solution that's purchased from a single infrastructure provider, the more quickly the solution or the problem can be resolved. Instead of having five people try and figure out the problem, five different people pointing their fingers, if you have one that's looking at the whole solution, the problem is going to get resolved a lot quicker. So they can speed up problem resolution. Time to market, of course. Again, this is the build versus buy. We've already talked about that, but it can get you to an e-commerce type infrastructure more quickly. And then lastly, cost and quality. By leveraging the expertise of the managed service provider, the security expertise, the networking expertise, the hosting expertise of a managed service provider, you can get the benefits of all that talent from a low-grade person all the way up to a highly certified person that's taken thousands of dollars to train. You can have access to that for a fraction of the cost. Plus all the automation and infrastructure that was put into place to manage the entire thing. That also translates into a higher quality solution. So the value an MSP can create for you, the end business user, or an end business user, is reduced complexity, increased performance, quicker problem resolution, time to market, and reduced costs. Some of the pitfalls. There are pitfalls, things we got to look out for. When you select an MSP, and again, we're focusing specifically on e-business infrastructure, e-business internet-based infrastructure, the MSP has to be a security-focused, a security core type of provider. There was an example just recently of a hosting company based in the UK that was hit with the Trojan horse virus called Backdoor G. While only 10, 15, 20% or so of the sites were affected, they were affected. All the passwords were acquired by the attacker. The site was down in some cases for at least a half hour, in some other cases more. But this is one where the customers thought the managed service provider had a security foundation, and in fact, whether or not they did is unknown, but it just shows the importance of making sure that provider has security roots. It is very important. For example, you wouldn't open up a storefront and leave the doors unlocked. That wouldn't be very good. The first night you go away, all your merchandise would be gone. It's the same type of analogy. Make sure security is in the roots of that managed service provider. And that also holds true for the hosting industry as a whole today. If you look, a lot of hosters really provide value-add co-location. And the whole industry is going through a migration. You do see a lot of value-add managed service providers coming into the market as we speak. But a lot of the hosters provide you the hosting, and a lot of customers aren't aware when they go and host their application that there is no security provided. It's very important to make sure you understand and assure that the security is there. Also, make sure the competency of the MSP is that of a service business. A lot of times you'll find service providers are equipment guys that are offering service as a feature, or software guys that are offering service as a feature, or telcos that are offering service as a feature. What happens is the focus goes on whatever the core competency is and not on service. Service takes second. And if you're buying service, you want service to be the core competency. So we'll talk more about that as we talk about scalability. And the third, again, when you go to managed services, when you select the managed service provider for one, two, three, four parts of the solution, no matter what those parts are, those do have to be actively managed by the person that is acquiring those services. It's not one of those things you just throw over the wall and expect it's going to happen. There's got to be continual meetings. There's got to be expectations set. There's got to be a constant feedback loop between the security or the service provider and the customer for the expectations of the customer to be met, as well as the ability for the service provider to meet those expectations. A lot of times, a customer will think, well, I picked the provider, I'm done, I'm out of here, everything is taken care of. That is not the case. At minimum, routine meetings are required to review performance and adjust. So those are some of the pitfalls. Some basic numbers to show you how fast and how rapid the whole managed service marketplace has taken off, which indicates two things. One, customers are dying for service. Customers are dying for advanced expertise in the areas of security, of hosting, and VPNs. It's clearly evident, the sources, IDC, Yankee Group, Forrester. If you look at the composite of the e-business infrastructure services, which are the three I just mentioned, 2,000 for the managed services, it'll be about 10, 15 billion. That number is going to well over double to well over 70 billion by 2004. Customers have the demand, and as well, that's why you see a lot of companies coming into this space offering service versus more network, more hosting, and so on. The key driver, again, I came back to this. Yes, Shelley.
Why do you see the growth being so large in VPNs as opposed to the other?
Well, the network piece, the network piece is always, it's a big hunk. And also the other reason, the big growth in that piece, there's a lot of dedicated network, thousands and thousands and thousands of dedicated lines that will be replaced by virtual private networks. So while you see this number going far, far up, if I showed you another chart that had dedicated circuits from the telcos, and this is, you know, it's doing exactly the opposite way, right? So things like DSL, wireless, overall virtual private networks are taking its toll on traditional networking. Overall, there is a positive delta for the customer in the dollars being spent on networking, and that's what this represents. The key driver here, the key catalyst behind all of this, there'd be no reason, you know, for security, there'd be no reason for virtual private networks, there'd be no reason for any of this stuff, there'd be no reason for hosting if there wasn't the drive towards businesses reinventing themselves. And the greatest measure of that are the number of websites. Today, there's about 700,000 businesses with websites. By 2004, the number is going to grow to about 1.5 million businesses with websites. Now, that doesn't look all that astronomical when you think about it. It's only doubling over 4 years. Well, I would think it'd be more than that. But when you peel back the onion, there's an important thing to remember here. I think it was about 80-85% of all websites today are simple information websites. You go there, you click, you find some information, you see who the executive are. Yay! That's about the extent of it. The websites of tomorrow will have streaming video, streaming media. It could be interactive with voice over IP. There'll definitely be commerce conducted over those websites, whether it's B2C or B2B. The complexity of these websites is going to increase dramatically. With the complexity requires more skills, more IT, more security, so on and so on and so on. So again, that doubling is kind of a misleading figure, but it does show the importance of, and the key driver, which are websites, causing the change in the economy or the demand for these managed services. All right, so now let's talk about the questions you have to ask, the issues that have to be addressed when you're selecting that managed service provider. There's four key objectives when you go and do this, or when you go and select your managed service provider, and when the customer implements an e-business infrastructure. One, it is very, very important to maintain control over the execution, the quality, and the cost of the entire solution. Maintain control. There's so many articles written that deals done in haste, deals done too quick, where loss of control ends up with a complete failure for the provider as well as the customer. You have to maintain control. It's easier, but you do have to maintain control. It's an active process. Ensure security. Talked about that, and we'll continue to talk about that. Security is the key component to the infrastructure. Without it, everything you do on the internet is up for grabs and at risk. And if you're putting your business on the internet and you're turning on virtual private networks, leveraging the benefits of the internet, and you're putting your application at a website and users, customers, and so on access it, if security has got to be present for the integrity to remain there, the usability to be there, for your information and assets to be protected. Security is key. Third, automation. Automation for the virtual world has got to be present. So as you select the provider, automation has got to be there. It cannot be done without automation. It's no more a manual world. You cannot watch a tunnel manually. It's all done through automation and tools. And lastly, accountability. Whether the accountability is gathered through service level agreements, through equity arrangements, through tight contractual arrangements, make sure you gain accountability from the ASP, from the MSP. As well, make sure that MSP is all, you're all important to that MSP, and we'll talk more about that as well. All right, let's pour the foundation. Let's look specifically at the issues that have to be addressed, the questions that have to be answered. The bedrock, the foundation, of course, is security. This year, Information Week had a study out just last week, they did with the U.S. government. $266 billion will be lost by U.S. businesses this year because of software viruses. $266 billion. The I Love You virus, you know, the one that occurred, what, 4 or 5 months ago, that itself cost almost $7 billion in productivity and other losses to businesses across the United States. Worldwide, the number is going to reach $1.6 trillion. This is significant. Why is it significant? It's almost 3% of the U.S. gross domestic product. It is now a major impact on productivity in this country. And as Greenspan puts it, if communications and our whole movement towards these e-commerce and web-based type applications is a major driver and a major way that we've achieved productivity gains, by not having security as the bedrock, all of that is at risk. So that's the bedrock, and then we're going to go through all these individual points one by one here. And we're still on time. Now, security. Let's take a look at some of the security. This isn't all of it. This isn't the complete checklist, but this is a good start. See, these are some of the high points you should hit. Some of the easy ones, and I hopefully it'll spur your thinking as you get deeper. Make sure whatever facilities the managed service provider is using to deliver your service, no matter what it is, make sure those facilities are secure. Make sure the doors are locked. Make sure there's security cards for the doors. Make sure there's an alarm system. Go visit the facilities. Don't take the provider's word for it that he's secure. Go look. That's a simple one, but it's very important. I mean, if everybody can just walk in and out of the hosting center or walk in and out of the network operations center, you're at risk. Does the MSP, does the managed service provider protect and segregate client information? Now, there's a lot of information piled up about the client at the managed service provider, whether it's a hosted customer, whether it's a security customer, whether it's a VPN customer. A lot of information. How do you make sure that information doesn't get mixed up with the next customer's information, with the next customer's information, and for that matter, with the company's own information? So make them show you their security policies to assure that there are policies in place to segregate that information. Take a look at the technology that's in place. And there, if it's hosting you're looking at, look at their hosted environment, make sure there's technology to segregate information as it comes into the hosting center. Make sure they show you. They'll all tell you they're doing it. You have to make sure that the managed service provider demonstrate that segregation is there. Look for the security policy. This is a wild one. There's been a lot of different studies on this, but a most recent survey, a global survey, again another one by InfoWeek, less than 50% of all corporations, and they interviewed 4,900 executives, less than 50% are currently comfortable with their security policy. Less than 30% even have one, or about 30% even have one. That's terrible. So certainly, though, as you go to your managed service provider, make sure they have a security policy in place. Make sure they have a computer emergency response team. You know, just look for the disaster recovery. A security policy.
Right. It's a very broad statement.
Right.
Physical, logical, all.
It's a document, and it just talks about how all kinds of information inside the company will be handled. And it tags which information, I'm simplifying, but which information is low priority and can be accessed by all. Which information is medium, high, you know, medium, high, and high, for example. Which information can't be seen by anybody, which is maybe categorized as customer information. And it also couples with access to systems in general. Who can access the trouble ticket system? Who can access the customer status system, and so on. So it's a document that defines all the information and all the systems and who should have access to it. Then, once the policy is done, it has to be implemented. And then there's usually a security council with a security officer that's responsible for implementing that policy throughout the entire organization, making sure that the firewalls in the organization or the databases and the passwords are set up in such a way that if the finance group should not see what's going on in the IT organization, that in fact their passwords don't work over here. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, sure.
Good. If you're a customer and you're looking at a managed service provider to provide you hosting or security services or VPN, you should ask that managed service provider for their security policy and then have them demonstrate to you how they've implemented that policy to assure when we take, let's say you have 40 sites that are going to be secured by the managed service provider. You would like to see, after you give the managed service provider the information about the 40 sites, the location, how is that protected? How do I know the lowest level technician isn't going to get to see who's working in that location? That's what you want to see from the managed service provider.
At your leisure.
Well, we got a perfect spot here. I'll announce it. Arthur Money is speaking in Colossal 4 at 5:40. I guess that's the
Secretary of
Defense. So that's the secret speaker. Okay. Let's see. Make sure they have a disaster recovery team, and also make sure if they are backing up your data, take a look at how they back up your data. Take a look if it is going to be backed up offsite. What's the process and mechanism to protect that information as it's being moved from their location to an offsite location? Would be another thing. Make sure in the event that the contract terminates, what's the transition phase? How does that work? Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. The question was also, she had made a comment that it's probably important to also, in the event that you terminate a contract with a managed service provider, make sure it's clearly defined what happens to the backed up data after the termination of the contract. So in general, make sure there is a clear transition plan laid out in the event of contract termination. Okay, so that's security. Those are just some high. Now, this isn't everything, but this is some high points to hit when you're looking at the security aspects. Look for a flexible solution. Look for engineered solutions that leverage a standardized platform. What does that mean? That is in contrast to going to an all custom type arrangement where the solution is custom for you. And it's in contrast also to the one size fits all standard. This is what you have to use. You want to look for common elements, common components that are leveraged by many customers, and that gives you the cost benefits, but that can be engineered and tailored specifically to meet your needs. For example, you may want to make sure that there's a very robust memory management system at your holster system or at your holster's company that can be leveraged by all the customers that any one individual customer would not be able to pay for. For example, the EMC memory system. That's a very expensive system, but it's an extremely robust system. A lot of companies can't afford to buy that on their own. So if you find a company that has that system in place where you can leverage it, you get the cost benefits of leveraging that cost across many customers. It also contributes to speed. If it's there, if it's ready, if it's available, you're going to go up a lot faster than if it was a complete custom build solution. And also, if it's there, it's available, it's also going to be more reliable. It's already tested, it's installed, it's in place, it's available, and you know it's reliable because it's already working. And again, we already talked about avoid the one-size-fits-all approach. That's not good anymore. It was okay for the common website, for the shared server, for just putting up your simple website. That's fine. But when you move to mission-critical e-commerce-type solutions, you want to have certain aspects of the system tuned to meet your needs, certain aspects of the solution, whether it's security or whatever, tuned to meet your needs. And also, seek a firm that demonstrates the ability to meet your changing needs. You might be small, growing large. You might be large, growing small. You might be one type of business changing over the next few years. Make sure the company can migrate and change as your needs change. One of the ways to look for that, of course, talk to customers, references. Also, though, look and see if they have small customers and large customers. That's a pretty good indicator if they can handle small as well as large customers. Scalability. Very important. It's another benefit of going to a managed service provider, but also this is something you want to ensure in the evaluation process. First thing you look at are the systems. The systems that are in place, are they scalable? Will they handle one customer or will they handle 1,000 customers? Will they handle 5 alarms? Will they handle 50,000 alarms? Make sure the systems that are in place you feel comfortable can scale as your business scales and as important as their business scales. Process. Look at their processes. A lot of companies don't have processes yet. Look at their processes. Make sure their processes scale. Things to look for example, if it's an extremely manually intensive process, probably not a very scalable process. If every circuit that has to be installed has to be manually ordered, manually tracked, manually billed, that's not very scalable. That's great for 5 circuits a month. It doesn't work too well for 100 circuits a month. So look at the processes to make sure they're not manual intensive and that they'll scale with your business as well as, again, their business. And again, go back to the service focus. Make sure they're service focused. Look to make sure they're not a hosting company or a telco or a hardware company or a software company just offering these services as a feature, as a benefit. Because when it comes time to grow, or when cash becomes a tight thing at that company, the dollars are going to flow towards the core business, not towards the service business. The first layoffs will occur in the service business, not in the core business. So you want to make sure you pick a service business because the scale will be there from a resource, both human and capital. Okay. You know, you do the presentation 100 times, and then when you're up here, the PC locks. All right. Now what do I do? Well, I have to figure out how to get the system to come back alive.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Can you talk about this lack of qualified IT personnel in the United States? The company who does this have a MSP system, pretty decent talent. You know, right?
Yep, I get exactly where you're going. So there are two questions, basically, that you asked. One is, all right, where does the MSP get the skills from? And then secondly, when acquiring the skills, are we looking for more people as well as technical skills when delivering these services?
Layer in there.
Right. Well, the answer to the first on the people skills, managed service providers have the luxury of service being a revenue-generating effort. Most IT, you know, most companies with their internal organizations, what is IT? What is the communications group? It's expense, it's overhead. That's a completely wrong way to look at it, but that is in fact the case. With that being the case, the experts that are needed to deploy these services are underpaid. Sorely underpaid in a lot of cases. So, as a managed service provider, we have the luxury to pay these experts a lot more than companies can themselves. We also then are focused on the ongoing training of these people and upkeep, because after you put the solution in once for a major company, they usually just leave it there. Now it's a cost, not just to see how we can maintain the cost. For a managed service provider, there's always the next technology coming, so it's a very exciting place for these tech savvy people to work. So it's a better environment, the pay is better. It's more dynamic, and attracting people, in my case, for our company, we've had no problem whatsoever attracting people to our organization. Now, the other one, it's a little bit more complex of a question. What kind of people are we looking for? Because everybody in the organization is, if you will, customer-facing, they do have to have a customer view to them. They have to have a personality. They have to be nice. They have to be friendly, and that is a trick. And in the interview process, you know, we do look for, you know, those characteristics. It is also a constant coaching thing within the organization to make sure that everyone understands that we have one process. That's a process of pleasing the customer. I mean, we have a lot of processes, but I make it very simple. You have the one process. You got to focus on the customer. And it's a constant communication to the employee base so they understand that it is customers. But we do look for those characteristics when hiring the service people. Any other questions why we have an opportunity here? Did you? Okay. Oh, it's coming back. Let's see what else. I'm trying to, Shelley. That's a good question. Did everybody hear the question? She asked the question about, okay. This is where it comes down to the systems. One of the best companies in the world, I'm sorry, I'm trying to focus on two things. One of the best companies in the world at doing this is Cisco, because they have the follow the sun service all over the world, and the deal is Cisco or systems. You know, the systems have one view of their customers, no matter where you're at around the world. That's the first thing to look for when you're following the sun with service. The second thing, again, are the procedures. Make sure the procedures are in place when it hands off from one shift to the next, that open tickets, this is one area where you usually have where things will fall apart, where you have an open ticket on one shift. If it hasn't been handed off in a very warm manner to the next shift, it'll usually drop. So and then you catch that stuff in the methods, reviewing the methods and procedures of the managed service provider. All right. I have been doing presentations for probably 20 years now, and this is the first time this one has happened. I've had overhead light bulbs burn out. I've had my mouth completely freeze up. I've had all kinds of things like that, but I've never had the PC lock up. So, at any rate, I'll go back to this. Make sure the managed service provider is service focused. Talk about the automated support system. Make sure there is an automated support system to manage the entire virtual world. There is no way today these services can be delivered consistently, reliably, and there's no way problems can be resolved without an automated support system. You want to look for a couple key aspects in that system. The first one, and probably the most important one, is the ability for the customer to maintain control over their environment. So you want to look to make sure that they have a portal that the customer can log into and see in a secure environment, they can see the services that the managed service provider is providing. All of them, not just one of them. And this portal should show a lot of information about the service levels, the status of the service, and so on. It should allow for you to check status of all activities, trouble tickets, installation, change activities, and so on. It should also ensure the consistent delivery of services. So you should be able to go into the portal. The customer should be able to go into the portal, look at the service level agreement. How did my provider do this month? They should be going check status on all their elements. Let's say you have 50 locations around the world. You should be able to see all those locations and make sure the locations are up and running. Or if there's a problem, be able to drill down and find out what that problem is at that location. And then be able to check and make sure there is activity going on to resolve that problem by the provider. So you want to make sure that the system, first off, is there, and make sure it's there. A lot of companies do not actually have the system, but they talk about it. Or they talk about a bunch of different systems that they've strung together. You want to look for one cohesive system that delivers the entire service. Look for customer responsiveness. You want the managed service provider to be the single point of contact. You don't want them to just do their one little piece and then throw it back to you or pass the buck to the other provider. That is the most frustrating and aggravating thing to a customer. So as you look for the managed service provider, make sure they own the problem as a single point of contact through resolution of that problem. Make sure that you get the access you want. There are people that want to call via the 1-800 number. So be it, they should get the 1-800 number. If they want to send email, fine, they should send email. If they want to use a portal, they should be able to use the portal. Also, make sure there's literature supporting everything that they're providing you and training. I'm going to speed up here a little bit because we did lose a little time. Sorry about that. Service level agreements, make sure you do have a service level agreement in place. The key point there on the service level agreement, make sure it meets your needs. Don't get caught up in all the technical jargon of, oh, I got to have mean time to repair, I got to have network availability. Those things are important, but make sure the service level agreement meets the specific needs of your business. If the most important thing to you is on-time changes, then make that the key part of the service level agreement. If the most important thing in yours is on-time installation of remote sites because you have 50,000 agents across the United States, well, then make that the key part of your service level agreement. Don't take the standard service level agreements. Understand what's most important and have that implemented through your provider. Also, be very clear on what's being measured and how it's being measured. I've run a lot of service organizations, and boy, there's a lot of games that could be played with these numbers. Make sure you know what is being measured and how it is being measured. As for flexibility, your business is going to change. You should be able to review the service level agreement on a very timely basis and be able to change the characteristics of that service level agreement. And again, make sure there is a mechanism for you to monitor and track performance against that service level agreement. Again, reports, portal, so on and so forth. Proactive management. You know, it's not okay for you to call, you shouldn't accept, or customers should not accept, having to call the service provider to tell them there's a problem. The provider should provide proactive management. And that comes down to a couple of things. They have to automatically detect the problem. So look for three specific things. Make sure these things are being measured. How fast will they detect the problem after it occurs? They can measure these things if they're doing it. How fast will they tell you? They can measure that too. How fast will they begin fixing it? There's a lot of providers that, oh yeah, they'll detect a problem after an hour, but there's no commitment on when they'll actually start fixing it. Make sure those 3 points are documented, you see them, understand them, and you track them. And also look at life cycle management from the managed service provider, as well as does the managed service provider continually analyze your environment, whether it's a security environment, a hosted environment, or a network environment. Once the problem's detected, do they have automated fault isolation and detection? Isolation and resolution. This is really important when you're stringing a bunch of parts together. If you have a hosted application, security, virtual private network, all this stuff working together, a lot of different pieces, everything's interacting. Any one piece affects all the others. One fails, they all throw off thousands of alarms. Without automation and without watching all the pieces, this could take hours to resolve and diagnose exactly where the problem's at. Make sure that the managed service provider has the systems in place, can monitor all the parts, and resolve, quickly identify, and then resolve the problem through automation. The last point's very important. Make sure the process is closed-loop process. What is closed-loop process? It starts and ends with the customer. The problem starts, of course, with a customer situation, or an installation starts with the customer request, and it ends with the customer saying it's installed or the problem's resolved. All too many providers want to send their truck out, resolve the problem, close, done, you know, history. You might not think, or the customer might not actually think it's fixed. Make sure the process, the last step in the process, is verifying with the end customer that the activity is final, whether it's the trouble's resolved or the installation is done or the change has been made. Expertise, I've kind of hammered this one heavily. You want to look for a couple things. In fact, the one question was relative to this. You want to look for an experienced management team that's experienced in service. Not in hardware manufacturing, not in software development, but in service. It's a different animal. So you want to look for an experienced management team that understands how to manage, understands how to deliver service. Then you want to look for the expertise, the technical expertise underneath. Do they have the expertise and certifications and the variety of services that are being provided? Do they have firewall expertise, NT hosting expertise? Do they have memory expertise? Do they have VPN expertise? On and on and on. You want to make sure they have all the certifications and expertise necessary to deliver the service you're buying. Check the references, talk to customers, talk to analysts. Look at the experience level of the people inside the company. If everybody's got 3 years of experience, you're going to have some pretty wild experiences. If everyone has 10 to 15, you're probably going to be a lot safer. So look at the experience level of the people with inside the company. You want a good spread between them. Also make sure that the provider has a plan for disaster recovery and so on. So recapping very quickly, there is a rapid movement towards web-based services. We all are quite aware of that for all the variety of reasons. For the strategic advantages that it means to a business, whether it's changing from a brick and mortar to a click and mortar, there is a definite movement towards web-based services for strategic advantages. The cost benefits are also there, going from a dedicated network to a virtual private network, going from distributed applications to web-based applications. The benefits from being web-based from a cost standpoint are tremendous. Customer demand will also force most customers to implement internet web-based solutions. So there is the movement. Now, with the fast movement there, and this isn't something that's going to happen over the next 10 years, it's happening now, and it happens in months. It doesn't happen in years. With the rapid movement, there is also the ensuing rapid movement towards managed services. Requirements for expertise, the requirements for performance, speed to market. These are things driving the move towards managed services, and of course, the cost benefits that you'll gain. I apologize for the hiccup on the technology here, but I'm hopeful that some of the insight that I've provided you, the tools that I've provided you, the thoughts, even my name, I welcome all of you to give me a call to discuss this further and other ideas and thoughts will help you as you make your selection, as you make your evaluations of how to implement your e-business infrastructure. To end with a quote from Gazelle.com, they're and a fairly successful dot-com company. He was quoted in Information Week, Michael Van De Cree. E-commerce sites are being implemented by IT people, not experts in the area of network architecture. They end up doing stupid things like installing a database server and then continuing to use default passwords after the server is in production. That's just one of many examples that we see as you take something from a nice, safe internal world to an external world. So thank you, everybody, very much. And again, I truly apologize for the technology screw-up, but I'll leave you with 3 points. As you select that provider, as you look for a managed service provider, make sure that the customer, if you are the customer, make sure you are all important to that service provider. It's real easy to go to a very, very, very big provider and get lost as a customer number or somebody that just gets a bill sent to them. Make sure you are very important to that service provider. Make sure that the service provider is, again, focused on service, not on some other core business where service is a feature. Make sure service is the core. It's a big difference. And lastly, moving towards managed services allows the end business customer the ability to focus on their core competencies, which is all important. It's more important to apply the technology than it is to actually manage and run the technology from a business standpoint. So thank you. Can I answer any questions? I know we're running just a hair late here. And then, sure. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, there's a lot of different models out there, but the I talked about a specific MSP, an MSP that can provide all three. But in this scenario, the general contractor scenario, building a house, you can go to one company for security, another for hosting. You can go to an ASP for the application. You can go to a carrier for the transport. The more it absolutely can be done. It's just the complexity of being the general contractor continues to increase, and the burden of integration, the more players you add, becomes the burden of the customer. The more you can collapse into fewer providers, the easier and actually the better performing the overall solution will be. There's a model that has been being tossed about. It was in Business Communication Week or Business Communication Review last week, Virtual Bricks 2 from Rick Juarez. Both have laid out a model of three primary categories, top layer being the application provider or the ASP, the middle being the internet infrastructure provider, which provides the hosting, security, and VPN, and then the bottom being the network provider, the raw fiber, the raw DSL, the raw wireless, and those three being the primary three players that the general contractor would assemble together strategically for their business. I had one point I made in there. It has to be a very working. Did everybody hear the question? Yeah, it's a long question, but let me see if I can paraphrase it correctly. How do you get your managed service provider in a specific example of providing web hosting services in a specific situation where the web hosted application was hacked? How do you get the managed service provider to first tell you that you were hacked, because it could have egg on the face of the service provider? I think that was the primary question. And what was the
yes, and also if it's going to cost the service provider a lot of money, it's kind of like a benefit to vendors.
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's the key is that the relationship, again, has to be a collaborative relationship. It cannot be win-lose. You know, the old days, you know, the outsourcing arrangements were the service provider and the customer were sometimes at odds. It's got to be win-win. It's the customer has to, or I mean the service provider, this is a very good question. When you set up the contract, that would be something that would have to get captured in the service level agreement. That, in the event of a security breach, you have to be notified within 15 minutes, period. That's it. It's just got to be there. Being hacked is not, it happens. It's part of business. It is part of business. And the issue is how to minimize the hack from occurring, and number two, how to quickly recover after the hack occurs. I would like to stand here and say a hack would never occur, but I think you and I both know it's inevitable that it can't be prevented. It would be impossible to prevent. So the issue is in a service level agreement, make sure it's in there that there is a response that has to occur.
And there was a curiosity about any previous events. You should have full, I mean, a customer is going to need full disclosure and full control on demand of their log files anyway. I'll pass it on to my colleague who wants to add something here.
You know, there's no guarantees on anything, but one good indication that the company that you're dealing with isn't just giving you a song and dance by saying we provide 100% security is whether or not they know what a cert team is and whether or not they have one. If they know what one is and if they have one, then they're ready to deal with those realities because, again, there's no such thing as 100% security all the time, every time. It's impossible. So if somebody's telling you that they are, run like hell.
Those kind of things, can be put in the service level agreement, and then through a portal. Again, as you look at the automation, those things should be made accessible through the portal.
One other point: if you're managing it, if you're posting it yourself, you may never know that you were hacked.
Absolutely.
Right.
So I'm not saying you're better off than.
Well, the thing is that advice to the service provider is to make the answer, and it's like paying a lot of money. Questions? All right. Well, thank you all very much, and have a nice day.